Some of you are coming to the temple who are haven't been part of this ongoing seminar for this Thanksgiving weekend, so I'll give you a little background. During this weekend, in a series of morning and evening classes, I've been discussing chapter 2 of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Chapter 2 is entitled Divinity and Divine Service. Nice title. And in that chapter, the whole essence of Srimad Bhagavatam in the form of questions and answers is being presented. Without reviewing all those classes that we've been giving, just a little summary. The first two questions that we've covered so far, this evening we'll be touching on the third question out of six that make up these three chapters, 1 through 3. The first question was posed by the sages of Naini Sharanya to Suta Goswami, who had heard Srimad Bhagavatam spoken by Shukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Parikshit. He was in the audience of the assembly of sages when that was taking place. So later they were asking him to explain what he had heard, but they asked in the form of a specific question. One was, what's the all-around ultimate good for all living beings in all circumstances of life? Like, after that question, what other questions do you need? So that was their first question. And the answer was paradharma, or devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Savai pungsang paro dharmo yato bhaktir adhoksaje. And that service, when rendered without material motivation and without interruption or without being checked by anything material, that is so satisfying. It's fully satisfying to the self, to the degree that there's no other attraction, no other shelter, no other thing of desire that can take the mind away or take the soul to some other activity. Fully satisfied. And the second question was, out of all the vastness of the Vedic literature, it's so deep and so profound, and people of this age, they're not going to have the interest, what to speak of, even the capacity, if they had some interest, or to go through the whole of the Vedas and understand the essence. And even if they make some attempt, they'll be misguided. They're lazy and unfortunate. Above all, always disturbed. It's just not going to happen. Can you please, therefore, make it very easy? And you know what the essence of the Vedas are. Can you explain very succinctly what's the essence? Another very nice question. So the answer is supplied. Again, devotional service. Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojataha Janayati Ashu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayad Ahaitukam. Those who approach the Vedas, they're, both of these features are very much of interest. Knowledge, and with knowledge, the companion is detachment from that which is not knowledge or ignorance. Detachment from all the rest. Vairagya. Jnana Vairagya. That couplet is very prominent in the whole of Vedic wisdom. This verse is saying, through devotional service, that outcome the means of devotional service produces the consummate form of knowledge and detachment. And it's the essence of all of the Vedic wisdom. So the verses that we were covering so far, we're expanding on those two verses, describing what is Paradharma, what the process is like, what the purpose should be. Specifically, the purpose was expressed as Apavarga. There's these two terms, the opposites, Pavarga and Apavarga. Those of you that know a little Sanskrit, one of the letters of the Sanskrit alphabet, just like we teach our children here in America, A, B, C, D, E, F, G. So there's the learning of the alphabet. And in the Sanskrit alphabet, one of the letters is Pavarga. Pa, pa, ba, bha, and ma. Prabhupada explained those letters of the Sanskrit alphabet. Pa stands for parishrama, or hard labor. So material activity requires passion, inspires hard labor. And in the material world, that's what we find. And the second letter, pa, stands for fena, or foam, when one works very hard. Sometimes in the corner of the mouth, little foam forms, like very prominent in a horse, working very hard, running very hard, and foam will form in the mouth. Pena. And following that hard labor and the foam in the mouth, pa, pa, ba, bhaya, or fear. And bha, or bondage. And ma indicates death. So this cycle of fruitive activity leads to these different stages. And that's pavarga. And its opposite is apavarga. Apavarga indicates freedom from that, or liberation. So ultimate liberation should be the purpose of one's duties in life. Dharmasya hi apavargasya narato tayopakautate. You were discussing this verse. Dharmasya nartasya dharmaikantasya kamo labhaya hi smritaha. So, in short, this aim of ultimate liberation is what Paradharma should be. So, with the motivation of Paradharma, the means, the gradual unfolding of that process, principally through hearing, shravanam, the whole Vedic process is through sound, shruti, hearing Vedic sound, and kirtanam, vibrating that sound, and shravanam, kirtanam, shravanam, kirtanam, gradually the awakening of our dormant spiritual consciousness, Vishnu smaranam, and following that other forms of bhakti. But it all begins with the hearing and vibrating, shravanam, kirtanam process. And gradually, the fullness of spiritual consciousness becomes awakened. And that was detailed very, very beautifully. The stages of bhakti. We've been discussing that at length. And so then the conclusion is, of that section, therefore, worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In that series of verses, it described that by engaging in devotional service, the influence of the modes of nature, particularly the lower modes of nature, rajas and tamas, ignorance and passion, are slackened and they subside and they're eliminated. They're eliminated to the point of complete elimination where one comes to shuddha sattva, pure goodness. So following that section, the next section, which we're discussing now, is, so there's the process, there's the purpose, the sankalpa, the intention behind the process, and then there's the object of worship. So, just this morning, the second session from this morning, there was this nice discussion about the modes of nature, comparing the modes of nature to earth, then wood, which is a transformation of earth, and then smoke, which is the progression towards fire, and then fire. And of all of them, it's just stages of the same thing, matter, but fire is best, because with fire one can perform Vedic Yajna, and transcendental knowledge is part of the purpose or objective behind Vedic sacrifice. Those who properly perform it. So, as fire is best, transcendental knowledge is best, similarly the mode of goodness is best compared to passion and ignorance, and worship of Vishnu produces that quality of goodness. He presides over the quality of goodness. So worship of Vishnu is best. The verses that we're going to hear this evening continue from that same position. It's what's taking place is a very clear definition of what parabhakti is. We have to have a very clear understanding of the object of devotion. And in any time you have a really good definition of something, you say what that something is as well as what that something isn't. It's inclusive and exclusive at the same time. Just take a very simple example. Supposing I know somebody's going to India and I'm requesting them to buy a pair of karchals, but they don't know what karchals are. So I could show them this is what karchals are, but if I don't have one to show them, I can say, here's what they are and here's what they aren't. It's hand symbols. But it's not like those really big ones, the drum set and the really, that's all symbols, but it's not, it's small. But I want the ones that are, they're flat like this, because sometimes they're ones that are curved. And I don't want the really big ones, like we call them in ISKCON wampers. They're not the ones that are shaped like this and then they're flat and they're like, 6 inches wide or even bigger sometimes. Jayapataka Maharsh had sets like 14 inches. Not those. That's not what I'm looking for. They're the smaller ones and they sound much sweeter if they have little ridges in them, not the ones that are flat with no ridges. And you describe what it is and what it isn't, so you can have a clear definition of what the object is. And so many, how to give ladies are sharing to another lady a recipe. And you describe this is what you do and you don't do that and so on. It's inclusive and exclusive. Good definition. So a very nice example of that, give you a scriptural example, is in Nectar of Devotion or Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu by Rupa Goswami. What's the subject matter he wants to talk about? He wants to talk about devotional service. So, in defining devotional service, he says, both exclusive and inclusive. Here's what devotional service isn't, and here's what devotional service is. So the first part, anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karma jnavratam, that's what devotional service isn't. It's devotion that's without material desire. Anya, abhilas, zippo, shunyam. Other desires are zero. And then he's specific. Which other desires? Jnana and karma. Anavritam. So the hopes for fruitive gain or speculative knowledge are absent. That's what it isn't. And here's what it is. Inclusive. Anukulyena Krishna Anushilanam. Bhakti Uttama. Very simple statement. But when you consider the message, it's a very strong message. Anukulyena Krishna Anushilana. Shila means activity. So Anu Shilana is following those activities of the perfected souls who are worshipping Krishna or serving Krishna. And anukul means accepting those activities that are pleasing to Krishna, following the example of perfected souls. That's what bhakti is. So we reject things that are not pleasing to Krishna, we accept things that are pleasing to Krishna. Inclusive and exclusive. And the whole of this very wonderful text, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, is resting upon that one definition of what bhakti is and bhakti isn't. So similarly, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna wants to describe to Arjuna, because Arjuna is asking, what's the topmost form of yoga? He describes the yoga system, then he describes the topmost yoga system, and of the topmost yoga system, he says what it is. Shraddhavan bhajate yoma same yukta uttama mataha. Mataha is Krishna saying, it's my opinion. When Krishna has an opinion, it's fact. It's just a humble way of saying it's a fact. When we say I have opinion, that's something else. In my opinion, it doesn't carry the same weight as Krishna's opinion. It's fact. And in his opinion, there's the yoga system, and then there's the topmost form of yoga, which means that all other forms of yoga are meant to gradually bring one to that standard of the topmost form of yoga. If you're practicing the other yoga systems properly, they'll bring you to the topmost. And what's that topmost? Shraddhavan, one who has faith, bhajate your mom. In a faithful manner, you engage in bhajate. You engage in devotional service to Krishna. Topmost form of yoga. So what is that topmost form of yoga? That's like a very tight description. So Krishna then, in the next six chapters of Bhagavad Gita, elaborates. Right away he says, I'll explain to you how you can do that. How you can practice it. So to explain how you practice it, you have to say what it is and what it isn't. So part of what Krishna does in explaining what it is, he describes what it is, but he also describes what it isn't. And part of what it isn't is worship of other than himself. Because one can worship other than Krishna. One can worship a Bollywood star. One can worship a football player. And, you know, when I travel and visit homes sometimes, it's nice staying in temples whenever I travel, but sometimes it's staying in homes. And a common thing, of course that's not happening in all homes, but sometimes there's a family and the son has gone off to college, so they invite me to stay in their son's room. And I can tell you what it's like. There's the door and the wall by the door, and then there's three other walls. Over here is their favorite sports hero. Michael Jordan is one of the favorite ones. Number 34 basketball player, and there he is. And over here is their favorite Bollywood star. And over here is that little red sports car they want to get after they get their degree. And over on the side is on the night table is a little picture of Hanuman. That's their aspiration. They're worshipable objects. Some hero in Bollywood, some sports hero, maybe a soccer player. I don't know who those people are. And their dream car. So, especially convertible. And red is really popular. So one is going to worship something. And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes that worship is of him. When it's the topmost form of yoga, it's worship of him. But there's other persons who worship other things in other ways. And they're also Vedic. And Krishna describes that those who worship in other ways, that he uses the word avidhi, avidhi purvakam. They're done without proper vid, without proper knowledge, without proper understanding. Proper understanding because actually Krishna is the source of all things. Whatever it is that, for example, the devatas supply, where do they get their supply from? They may be the distributor, but there's the supplier for the distributor. And Krishna is this ultimate supplier of all things. So that worship, as Krishna says, is actually meant for me alone. Or, so why do they, if Krishna is the ultimate supply, and that's also within the Vedas, why don't they just go to Krishna? Well, there's a couple of reasons. One has to do with the modes of nature, and another has to do with the ease and facility with which the supply comes. So as in his language, in Bhagavad Gita, kamaistaistair rita jnana prapadyante anya devata. Prapadyante, surrender, anya devata, various devatas. Why? Kama, deep within the heart. Kama istaita hrita jnana. Because of a strong desire for enjoyment, one approaches various devatas and gets that supply very quickly. But the understanding is incomplete because Krishna is supplying the devatas are supplying them. And it's Vedic, so it's not, there's something wrong with that. But it's not paradharma, because the whole subject of the Bhagavatam is not just what is dharma, there are subsidiary dharmas, but ultimately they are meant to bring one to paradharma, or the topmost form of yoga, various ways of considering. So you'll see where all of this is going. I'm going to read the translation, we're covering verses 26, 27, and 28 and 29. And then we're going to jump ahead to this one, because it flows from the third question asked by the sages to Suta Goswami. Here's the translation for text 26. How are we to regard, so addressing, must one worship Vasudeva? Because it's been Vasudeve Bhagavati. So, must one worship Vasudeva? Is it not the same and equal to worship others besides Vasudeva, Krishna? Those who are serious about liberation respect all, yet they reject the forms of the demigods and worship only the all-blissful form of Lord Vishnu and his plenary portions. Because earlier verses were saying, Dharma should be performed for Apavarga, ultimate liberation. So the demigods themselves are not liberated, and therefore they cannot give liberation. Just like Hiranyakashipu, he underwent severe austerities for a long time with the desire, the sankalpa, that he wanted immortality. And his austerities were so severe that it was disturbing the whole universe. So the demigods went to Lord Brahma, please do something. So Brahma went to where Hiranyakashipu was performing his austerities. His whole body, he had been standing on his toes with his arms raised in the air for so many years that his whole body was eaten away by ants. Instead of a body, it was an anthill. So Brahma, from his kamandalu, poured divine water upon that anthill, and a beautiful Hiranyakashipu body was restored. And Lord Brahma said, what benediction would you like? You've been performing some austerities for some benediction. What would you like? I'd like immortality. And Brahma's reply is, I can't give you immortality. I myself am mortal. I can't give you something I don't have. Ask for something that I have. I can give you. Well, then give me the benediction that I cannot be killed in day or at night. Okay. Neither inside nor outside. Okay. Neither by any man, nor any animal, nor any weapon. No problem. What else do you want? And he had a nice little inventory list of cleverly trying to get around mortality by his, you know, slick, clever way of approaching things. Lord Brahma can give him all those things because the Supreme Lord could supersede any slick person. So he appeared as Lord Nrisingadeva and destroyed Hiranyakashipu. The demigods, the point is, the demigods cannot give liberation. And the earlier verses were saying one should perform dharma for ultimate liberation. So one should worship Lord Vishnu alone, because he alone is mukti pada, one who can give liberation. You approach his lotus feet and you reach his lotus feet, you have liberation. And others cannot deliver that. Here's what Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to this verse. Therefore, Vishnu and no one else is called Muktipada, or the personality of Godhead who can bestow upon us mukti, or liberation. The demigods, being like other living entities in the material world, are all liquidated. That's an interesting way of describing death. they're liquidated. At the time of the annihilation of the material structure, they are themselves unable to get liberation, and what to speak of giving liberation to their devotees. The demigods can award the worshippers some temporary benefit only, and not the ultimate one. It is for this reason only that candidates for liberation deliberately reject the worship of the demigods, although they have no disrespect for any one of them. So, primarily, this verse is saying, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, demigod worship is inspired by a wish to fulfill something. Again, using this word sankalpa. Vedic rituals where devatas are propitiated. It's because there's a particular sankalpa, a desire for longevity, a desire for good health, a desire for good progeny, a desire for knowledge. Many of the students that I've met, Indian students, they describe when I was growing up, there was only one time I went to the temple before every exam and after every exam. And otherwise, I didn't go to the temple so much because they want result. And that's nice. You go to the worship when you want something. But higher than doing worship because you want something is doing worship because you want to do worship. You simply want to please the object of worship and ultimately engage eternally in loving service to the lovable object, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's the gradual elevation position which the Bhagavatam is describing for us. Text 27 is more in relation to the modes of nature as opposed to the objects of attainment. Those who are in the modes of passion and ignorance worship the forefathers, other living beings, and the demigods who are in charge of cosmic activities, for they are urged by a desire to be materially benefited with women, wealth, power, and progeny. So, in his commentary, Jiva Goswami raises the question, very well, but whatever those who are distributors of something, ultimately the same thing could come from Lord Vishnu or Lord Narayan or the Personality of Godhead, because he's the ultimate emanating source of all things. So why don't they go to that ultimate emanating source of all things? And the answer is directly within this verse and other scriptural references. It's primarily inspired by the modes of nature, because those personalities who they worship are similarly of the modes of nature. So like attracts like, or birds of a feather flock together. Those that are rather in the quality of goodness or aspiring for the quality of goodness, that worship goes to Lord Vishnu. And there's mountains of quotes, Vedic, Shastra, describing that Vasudeva, just like, is the object of worship. Bahunam janmanam mante gyanavan mam prapadyate, right from Bhagavad Gita. Vasudeva sarvamiti samahatma sadurlabha. And so forth. Abundant indication of this. So, the next verse is a kind of like a summary, a conclusion, and very emphatic. Doesn't leave any room for doubt. Vasudeva para Veda, Vasudeva para Makaha, Vasudeva para Yoga, Vasudeva para Kriyaha, Vasudeva param Jnanam, Vasudeva para Tapaha, Vasudeva paro Dharmo, Vasudeva para Gatihi. So in case you had any doubt, there's no doubt left. Vasudev, Sarvamiti, he's everything. Here's a list of some of the everythings that he is. Now these other some things, there's a list of eight things, and each of these eight things are also Vedic. So now reach back to the question that was asked by the sages. Of all the vastness of the Vedic literature, what's the essence? So now it's taking apart some of this part, some headline categories of things that are Vedic, like cultivation of knowledge, or practice of yoga, or makkaha, the performance of sacrifice, the performance of charity, the performance of austerity, all these things that are Vedic, not just someone doing some austerity, but Vedic austerity, Vedic worship. Vasudev is everything. He is the essence of all those everythings. He is the essence. Here's how one of the most respected commentators of Srimad Bhagavatam, Sridhar Swami, describes this particular verse. Someone might question, why all this emphasis on Vasudev? Don't the Vedas describe various yajnas? And Sridhar Swami answers, yes. And who is the bhokta of all those various yajnas? Bhagavad Gita, chapter 5, text 29. Bhoktaram jagatapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram surhridam sarvabhutanam yatam mam shaktim richchati. Krishna is the bhokta of all yajnas. So, at the very beginning, I'll just little anecdote. I was in mid-Tennessee once, and there's a nice group of devotees that are there. They don't get much association, so I've been going to visit them for, you know, a little bit, once or twice a year, for a long period of time. So one time, there was an invitation at the Nashville, I don't know what it's called, Hindu temple. They wanted me to go as a guest speaker. I was not feeling so comfortable to go do that, but they were really enthusiastic, so I went. And the first part of it was a Karmakanda Yajna. I had never taken part in a Karmakanda Yajna before, and that was making me feel even more uncomfortable. But the very beginning, the first mantra was Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And I thought, wow, Srimad Bhagavatam class. But that's not just, they were just invoking the personality of Godhead as the bhokta of the yajna. And then there was invocation of Ganesh, and then there was invocation of various devatas to get, you know, what the person who the yajna was being performed wanted. And I kind of walked out. I lost interest really quick. But it's Vasudev is right there at the very beginning. Or Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. He's the Vokta. So others say, well, in the Yoga Sutras, within the Vedic literature, they describe yogic activities, beginning with asanas and pranayama and so forth. Sridhar Swami states that yogic activities are employed to attempt to attain Vasudev. Where is that concentration of the mind? Where is it to be reposed? On the form of the Supreme Lord, when one is very elevated in the yogic process. Someone else might say, don't the Jnana Shastras describe transcendental knowledge? And Sridhara Swami says, yes. And the highest form of transcendental knowledge is Vasudeva. Again, Bahunam Jamanam Ante Jnanavan Mam Prapadyate. Is the after many, many, many births of cultivation of knowledge. If one reaches the pinnacle of knowledge, it's consummated by surrender unto Krishna. Why? Because Vasudeva is everything. And so on. He goes through each of these. Oh, Vasudeva is the ultimate object of worship. So, just quick summary again. The ultimate objective or essence of all the Vedas is Paradharma. Paradharma is the engagement of devotional service without motivation for anything material and without interruption by any material obstacle. One is completely satisfied, and thus there's no other desire. The influence of the modes of nature subside, and one's concentration goes completely to the Supreme in loving devotion. And then the object is also now just been made very clear. Vasudeva. It was stated before, it's now just very emphatically reconfirmed. Vasudevi Bhagavati means Vasudev, not something. It's Vasudev. So, that was text 27 through 29. Tomorrow morning we're going to cover 30 through 33. Those verses are speaking about the process of creation and Lord Vishnu's role in that process of creation. But after creation, the Lord appears within that which He creates. So, the question is being asked. This is chapter 1, the third question. It's presented somewhat of a statement, but it's also a question. The sages say to Sutta, all blessings upon you, O Sutta Goswami, you know for what purpose the personality of God had appeared in the womb of Devaki as the son of Vasudeva. The son of Vasudeva is Vasudeva. So, there in the background, that's Sutta Goswami, and seated in front of him are the sages of Naimisharanya. This elderly gentleman in the very front with the long beard, this is the leader, Shonaka Rishi, who's speaking on behalf of the sages presenting the questions. So they're speaking. The question is being asked, why is it that the Lord appears within this world that He creates? Why does He appear within the womb of Devaki as the son of Vasudeva? What's the reason, the purpose behind the appearance of the Lord in this world? Why does He come? A couple of words are elaborated upon, especially in the purport. Bhadram te and Satvatam Patihi. So, O Sutta Goswami, blessings upon you. Bhadram te. They're respecting Him especially, Bhadram te, because of His great qualifications. They have an eagerness to hear. We were speaking about this in the morning session. Eagerness to hear, because they respected Sutta Goswami as being so qualified. They wanted to hear the subject matter about Krishna, and they understood that Sutta Goswami had that qualification. Earlier verses described, he not only heard Srimad Bhagavatam from Shukadev Goswami, but he fully understood it. And he not only understood it, but he had assimilated that knowledge. That means it was situated within his heart, and he was acting as an instrument of that knowledge, or a practical example of that knowledge. So therefore they wanted to hear from him. And they wanted to hear about Krishna, who is described in this particular way, Satvatam Patihi. And he's the protector of his devotee, because it's his nature. Krishna is Bhakta Vatsala. In this picture being depicted, it's Krishna protecting his devotee Arjuna, because Grandfather Bhishma had taken a vow that morning that he would destroy Krishna's dearmost friend Arjuna unless Krishna broke his vow. Bhishma Dev knew that Krishna would protect Arjuna and break his vow, because his vow was he wouldn't fight. But he broke his vow and was ready to fight with Bhishma just to protect his devotee. So he's the Satvatam Patihi, or the protector of his Satvatas, his devotees. The appreciation that what they want to hear about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his nature, Patihi, he is the protector of his devotees. So here's the answer of the third question. It's text 34 presented here. Why Krishna appears as in this world, because the prior verses, again, we'll discuss them this tomorrow morning, but how Lord Vishnu engages in the act of creation of this cosmic manifestation, and then he appears within it. So here's the translation. Thus the Lord of the universes maintains all planets inhabited by demigods, men, and lower animals. Assuming the roles of incarnations, he performs pastimes to reclaim those in the mode of pure goodness. So that's the answer given by Sutta. We know from Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives three reasons why he appears within this world. Pritranaya sadhunam vinashaya chaduskritam dharma sangstapanarataya sambhavami yuge yuge. So of those three, he wants to bring to the transcendental position those who are situated in the mode of goodness. He does so by giving his association, or by performing pastimes that they can later engage in katha, hari katha, or Krishna katha. And just by engaging in that katha, that spiritual sound vibration about describing his wonderful activities, it carries one to the position of goodness and into Shuddha Sattva, transcendental goodness. This is Krishna's stated purpose. He wants to attract souls back to his eternal abode. This is a depiction of Krishna transforming a leper, Brahmana, to a position of fully purified body just by touching him, embracing him. The Lord wants to elevate and purify his devotee. And part of that is to create the inspiration to go back to Godhead, of not just the qualified Brahmanas, those in the quality of goodness, but even those who are in the quality of ignorance, to attract them by his wonderful activities. And this is done through his pastimes, through his representatives, and through the scriptures that describe the Lord's pastimes that the representatives narrate and expand upon. In the course of exhibiting his pastimes, Krishna always maintains his transcendental position. He's never influenced by the modes of nature as we are. He's in charge of those modes of nature. And Krishna exhibits transcendental forms or the personality of Godhead, performs various leelas in various spiritual forms. And each of those forms are of an absolute Sat-Chit Ananda nature. And when they come in contact with the conditioned souls, this conditioned souls become purified. And especially by this process of hearing, Shravanam, and remembering and describing those pastimes. So this is Krishna's purpose of appearing, attracting souls back to him, to their natural position in the spiritual world. Very important question posed by the sages, very important answer given by Suta Goswami. And it's the wonderful service of the representatives of the Supreme Lord to narrate these pastimes. And by narrating, their own remembrance of these pastimes becomes concentrated. And the personality of Godhead appears in their mind as they're describing these things. And because they're so intimately connected, they can describe not only the pastimes but the inner feelings. One of the greatest acharyas in giving commentary in Srimad Bhagavatam for my liking is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, because he not only describes the meanings of things, but it's like he's within the heart of Krishna and describes what Krishna's feelings are, what his inner thoughts and contemplations are. He's so intimate in his relationship with Krishna, he describes these things. And in this way, there are great representatives of Krishna are passing on Krishna's mercy. And those that receive it naturally worship Krishna by their... This is Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, one who studies this sacred conversation is worshipping me with their intelligence, just by studying the scripture. Because the words of Krishna are non-different than Krishna. The pastimes of Krishna are non-different than Krishna. The form of Krishna is non-different than Krishna. And this is a way by which Krishna is giving his association, other than when he makes his appearance, but in the form of the scriptures that describe. And then there's places where the worship of Krishna is being carried out, and one can come and gain transcendental association with others in the same activity. Hare Krishna. Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. So any comments or questions? Yes. Yes.
And Vasudeva Sarvamiti. So why there is so much ambiguity about accepting Vasudeva or Lord Krishna as the Supreme Personality of God, and amongst people, especially from India, then Bhagavatam clearly states, I mean, it cannot be...
The answer is the modes of nature. A very simple answer. The modes of nature. And inspired by the modes of nature, there are different conclusions that persons reach. The Bhagavatam is the Amala Purana, spotless Purana. It's the natural commentary on Vedanta Sutra, which is the cream of all Vedic literature, but the Vedic literature does describe other things. And so some persons gravitate to some other things, and some other things, and some other things, without understanding the purpose behind them, or the ultimate objective of them. So, you know, in one sense, Krishna could just give one thing, just surrender unto me. But he doesn't give just surrender unto him, because some people aren't prepared to just surrender unto him. So that they're not like, it's either, you know, transcendence or hell. He gives means to gradually elevate according to the modes of nature. So there are other means, and persons are attracted to this means and that means and the other means.
Thank you. I like that point of ignorance, that most people are ignorant,
probably
that's why.
Well, and passionate. They want something. Other than purity, they want fulfillment of their desire. And so their means to fulfill their desire. That's what in the Srimad Bhagavatam first canto, chapter 5, chapter 4 and 5, Vyas compiled all the Vedas and was feeling himself dissatisfied. Narada explained, the reason for your dissatisfaction is you haven't said something wrong, but you've given inordinate emphasis to how to fulfill desires without clarifying what the purpose of the fulfillment of those desires ultimately can bring one to. You haven't sufficiently glorified the personality of Godhead. So you create one literature that does just that, and, you know, just skip all the other stuff in that one literature. So the Bhagavatam has that very strongly, exclusively. And others have so many other things for gradual elevation, etc. Because of the modes of nature.
Can I ask
one? Yeah, sure.
So Bhagavatam, you know, is considered as a graduate study. That's what you mentioned on the first day in the class.
Yeah.
Now, it talks about Supreme Personality, I mean, and talks about Lord Krishna in a complete sense. It explains so much in a detail. How can it be just gradual? I mean, it cannot be better than the Bhagavatam, anything.
Can you say the last part a little slower, because you spoke real fast?
There cannot be anything better than Bhagavatam, so how can it be just a graduate study? It talks about Lord Krishna.
I don't understand the question. Why is there? You're asking, is there a postgraduate study? Is that what you're asking?
There is, and you know, I mean, they say Chaitanya Charitamrita is a postgraduate, and you know, higher. But I kind of,
well, it's not. It's not in the sense of higher. It's just like the example of 2 + 2 = 4. So it's 2 + 2 = 4 in math, and 2 + 2 = 4 in algebra and trigonometry and calculus and abstract math. It's still 2 + 2 = 4. So in Chaitanya Charitamrita, a number of things. It's the personality of Godhead Krishna, who is the subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam, appearing in the role of his own devotee to show us how to enter into the highest possible stages of pure devotion that an ordinary living entity can't experience. It's very elevated, very filled with mystery, very deep. Applied science. Okay. Okay. Go ahead, use your...
I think you mentioned that worshiping Krishna is the thing. So how I'm worshiping, say, Rama, without having a material desire, because you put material desire in the person who worships certain things, or because of the material desire, and thought that many God might prefer it. But without having a mature desire, how does worshipping Brahma or Sipatanamana, does it give you the eternal moksha that you're looking for?
Yes. Yes. But when it's describing worship Vasudev, the forms of the Vishnu Tattva forms, Rama being one of them, is the same. Does that address your question?
Yes.
Yes. So one who becomes a, like Hanuman, one who becomes an ardent Ram Bhakta, their destination is Ayodhya, Vaikuntha, because that's where he resides. It's not Swargaloka. It's Vaikuntha. It's transcendental destination. And the qualities similarly become transcendental qualities for the worshipper. Okay. Put your hand up so he can see. You wanted to say something?
Hare Krishna. A follow-up question on what Mr. Prabhu said.
Okay.
So, why did the other scriptures then glorify other demigods as Supreme Personalities?
Because there are persons in this explicitly. This is it. Jiva Goswami's Tattva Sandarbha describes this very nicely and succinctly. And it is directly connected to the modes of nature. For those who are the Puranas are 18 in number. 6, 6, and 6 makes 18. 6 predominantly for those in the mode of goodness, 6 for those who are predominantly in the mode of passion, and 6 predominantly for those. So for those in the mode of ignorance, there is encouragement matching their mode to worship. But embedded within those tamasic puranas are messages that are also pure goodness. So it elevates them. But there are passages from the tamasic puranas that we don't make reference to because they're tamasic, that inspires the person who is influenced by tamagun, and similarly rajagun, and similarly sattvagun. And the Bhagavatam, according to the, not only to the Bhagavatam, but according to some of the other sattvic puranas, this is Shuddha Sattva. So our attention goes there. But the other scriptures are there to provide facility for those that are in those lower modes and are attracted to those lower modes to gradually become elevated.
It's not fulfilled.
We wouldn't say that it's a lie. We're not going to insult Vyasadeva that way. It's purposeful to attract and to gradually elevate those personalities to the quality of goodness. Like so many other things that are Vedic. Fulfill this desire, perform this yajna, but by so doing, you're accepting the authority of the Vedas, so you get elevation. You require a qualified brahmana, and so your mode of goodness condition is being elevated. It's taking you to the position of respecting some higher authority. It's not just your own endeavor. And gradually, as that mode of goodness becomes stronger, then knowledge becomes, capacity becomes stronger. And the knowledge capacity becomes stronger, I start to think not only happiness in this life, happiness in the next life, but wait a minute, what's this next life thing? There's this soul. So one becomes interested in the ultimate destination of the soul. It's just gradually progressive. For someone that if you just gave them one option, surrender to Krishna, you've lost your audience. Don't do anything else. Just surrender to Krishna. I'm out of here. So it's a large net that captures many and brings them gradually through the modes of nature, many lifetimes perhaps, to the modes of nature by culture and cultivation of a Vedic way of life that has its ultimate objective. But we're in this material world because we're rebellious towards Krishna. If you only give one option, go back to Krishna. Yeah.
So we talk about five rasas, which is
okay.
What is a rasa when somebody is thinking about Lord as their parents, not the child but as a parent? But is that, it's not a sacrifice. Or is that even a rasa?
It's dasya. As the child serves their parent. And the parent is supplying necessities. The child serves the parent is supplying the necessities. God the Father. Dasya.
Krishna, there are many instances where
Nanda
Maharaj celebrates the birthday of Krishna.
Nanda Maharaj does what?
Celebrates the birthday of Krishna.
Yeah.
Different anniversaries. So in the spiritual world, there is no concept of time. Do the devotees then celebrate anniversaries and birthdays and
you say there's no concept of time, but there is a concept of time. What a more precise statement is that in the spiritual realm, time is eternal. But while time is eternal, there's also events that appear to have a beginning and end. But that appearing to have a beginning and end is by the agency of the internal potency. Here's another one to add to your, you know, the stump the Swami questions. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, in the spiritual realm, there's no need of sunlight or moonlight or electricity. Right? Okay, put that on hold for a moment. Now let's go to Krishna's pastimes, where there's seasons. There's the full moon night of the Sharad season when Krishna does his Rasa Leela. So wait a minute. There's no need of moon, and there's no need of sunlight. So what's going on here? There's a contradiction, Maharaj. How do you explain that one? Because the in the spiritual world, whatever it is that's manifest is manifest by the Lord's internal potency for the purpose of and setting the atmosphere for his pastimes. So even to conceive of events that are eternal, your mind can't get around that one. You can't like encompass it. Because we only know events that are within time. So what's an event that's beyond the influence of time? We can't conceive of that. But there are events. So it's an event that's influenced by or manifested by the internal potency of the Supreme Lord. It's a spiritual event. I can give other examples, but you can't apply the same yardsticks to the spiritual realm that you apply to the material realm. So there, your premise was there's no concept of time, and there is a concept of time. In the spiritual realm, time is eternal, but there's a concept of seasons and age, you know, Krishna's various ages, and so forth. Krishna's gone, and the passing of time seems like hundreds and hundreds of years for the gopis in a moment that Krishna is gone. There's a sense of passage of time, but it's not time like we know it. Different yardstick. How do you vote? Okay, snap your fingers, you get the baton, huh? Okay.
I have a basic question.
Okay.
What is God's purpose of creation?
Okay.
What's purpose, why? I mean, you could surrender to Krishna's...
I got the question.
Yeah.
It's a standard question. I'm very familiar with it. And there's twofold. One of them is to provide an opportunity for the rebellious living entities to try Mission Impossible. To enjoy separate from God, which is impossible. There's no such thing as enjoyment separate from God. So the purpose, one of the purposes is to create that facility whereby the living entities can try. It's called Maya. You can't. Maya. Not possible. Not this. That's one of the reasons. Because the living entities are these rebellious, some rebellious, so its creation is to provide that facility. And the second reason is to correct that mistake, misuse of free will. It's built into the design by the designer. There's little prompts that tell us, ouch, and oof, and I'm not enjoying here. I wanted to enjoy. It's not enjoying, it's something else. Yehi sam sparshanja bhoga doka yonaya evate, by design. This isn't nice. I want another situation. Let me just do it differently. I'll just adjust things. I'll approach it a little smarter. I'll get some more education and, you know, make a little device so I can then get happiness or something. And keep trying and trying. So, but when one is thoughtful, there are lessons that say, and then Krishna sends some messengers that says, why don't you come back to Krishna? That's where you belong. That's your happy home. No, I'm going to keep trying it. I'll just do it smarter this time. And so on. So it's a house of correction and a house of detention. Both. Prison. Material world is compared like that. The vast majority of souls are in full harmony with the Supreme. So supposing somebody says, I don't want to be in harmony with the Supreme. I want to go my own way. I want to be independent. You can't be independent. Here's a facility. You can think you're independent. But you'll suffer. Okay, here it is. And to correct that mistake, that's the two purposes. And when that correction takes place, there's no longer the need for the material world. There's no longer need for a material body. You get relieved of that material body. And the sojourn of searching for happiness where there is none. It appears that there is some. Like a mirage. It looks like water, but there's no water. There's no happiness in this world. From a transcendental perspective. There's sense gratification. Some sparshaja. The senses are contacting sense objects. And the senses say, ah. And then later it's, ooh. Happiness in the mode of passion. The beginning seems to be very nice, and later it's poison.
Why do you need it?
Oh, because we're part of Krishna. Would you like to not have free will?
Because that's the problem, right?
Yeah, no, it's not the problem. The problem is misuse of free will. Let's go the other side. No free will. No free will, then you don't have love. But love is the natural state. Love means I have some options. I can say no, or I can say yes. And love is I voluntarily say yes, but I also have the option to say no. That's free will. We're part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has unlimited free will. So the part also has little free will, constitutionally. But you want a lobotomy. Remove your free will. Then you remove your existence, because it's part of your existence. You can't do that. It's just part of the constitutional position of the part of the Supreme, who has unlimited free will.
God asks how all that free will do.
He gives you, not exactly gives you, gives you, but never takes it away. It's just constitutionally part of your existence. And he's giving the advice. Use it properly. And here's how to use it properly. You go, no, I don't want to surrender to you. I want independence. I want out of here. Misuse of free will. So what do you do? What's God to do? Yeah. Prabhupada gives the example of a young family member. Mom and Dad, I'm 18. I'm leaving home. You can give your permission or don't give your permission. I'm leaving home. It's your choice. But I'm leaving home. Please don't. We love you. I'm leaving home. You can't stop me. I got free will. I'm 18. I don't like it here anymore. What's the parent going to do? Gives all good reason that it's not advisable. And all the other reasons, I'm leaving. So, very well. Your room is here. We love you. This is your home. Whenever you want to come back, please return. I'm not coming back. And so the parents don't forget their child. The child may forget the parents, and they're concerned about the child, and you know, getting messages about how he or she is doing, and trying to provide something, but always inviting them, wishing them to come back. Krishna is like that, the Supreme Loving Father. We just read from Prabhupada's purport, more than we can possibly even desire to be in Krishna's association, Krishna desires us to return. He doesn't create the material world out of vengeance or wrath, as some people teach. is reluctantly, please don't go. About the mode of goodness.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
So what I'm hearing here, I think, is that when you worship the Lord, you are in the mode of goodness. But what I have heard in the past is that doing service to mankind, like helping other people, the
kind,
etc., are in the mode of goodness. And I've also heard a proverb that said that service to mankind is service to God. So I just want to understand which one to prioritize.
Okay. Classic question. Here's one example from Srimad Bhagavatam that addresses that question. In your yard at your home, imagine you have a tree. And you're feeling compassion towards the tree, and so you want to give the tree some water. So you try to put the water in the leaves, the water in the branches, the water in the twigs, the water in the trunk, the water in the limbs, the water in the flowers and the fruits. Or you put water on the root of the tree, and all the limbs and branches and fruit and flowers and twigs and everything gets water. In fact, when you try to put water in the leaf, etc., it doesn't go in that way. If it falls to the ground and goes into the root, then it'll go into the tree. So that's the best method. That's the Bhagavat method is, find the root of existence and place your service propensity there, and all the parts of existence are flourish. Now, okay, that's a nice idea. But what about, you know, then you give a list of, there are some needs of the parts of existence. So, in our particular capacity as citizens and, you know, good citizens, well-wishers of others, we may do some service in relation to others, but that should be done, let's say, one takes the profession of being a physician. Or a social worker or something. Those professions should be taken up in the consciousness that you're watering the root of the tree. You're serving God, and here's a part and parcel living entity who's part of God. But it's not just serving the person, it's service to God. In that sense, service to God is service to persons, not service to persons is service to God. Or say it the opposite way. There's a drowning person. I'm walking by the ocean, and a person is out in the ocean, drowning. Help! Help! Oh, I just serve God. I'm sorry. You can just drown. We don't do that. But we don't swim out into the ocean and take the jacket or coat of the person that's drowning and bring the coat back to shore and let the person drown. So who's the person that you're trying to serve? And the person is ultimately the soul within, and the soul within has this intimate relation with the Supreme Soul. So if you have a clear understanding of the person that you're trying to serve, at the very center is the Supreme Person, and there's the soul, and then there's the covering of the soul. So if I'm going to be a doctor, I was, before I became a devotee, I was on the career path of becoming a doctor. So supposing somebody's a doctor, we have in our audience some doctors. So their service is something that's in relation to the body. But I know these devotees, and they're conscious of the soul. Now, by their profession, they're limited what they can say in their office place. But the concern is for the well-being of the soul. And because they're the physician, they're in a There's respect for the physician. They're in a dependent position, looking at the physician to heal them. So, given that dynamic of the physician and the patient, they're able to pass on some messages of God consciousness. And they do this. They've described this to me. I'm not pointing to the individuals right now, but they do that. So it's, well, taking care of the needs of the body, the covering, the coat, there's the primary need of the soul. And that should be at the center of whatever service we do to others. Another practical example of the same principle. One of the functions of our Hare Krishna movement, given by our founder Acharya, is the distribution of prasadam. So we engage in feeding people that don't have sufficient food. But it's Krishna prasadam. It's their spiritual benefit directly in that. Or when it, like, last year I was the chairman of our GBC. I don't know if you know what that means. A governing body commission group that like take final managing responsibility. So while I was the chairman of this international group, this earthquake in Haiti happened. And so a group of devotees mobilized from different places around the world, some that knew how to build houses, some that knew how to, you know, do different things. And we arranged for them to go and do some service to help that disaster. But they didn't just build houses and feed people. They chanted and taught people a life of devotion and the spiritual teachings of Bhagavad Gita, along with helping them to get their lives back together as much as they could. So with God consciousness at the center, then Bhagavan Seva. And according to our nature, our capacity, rendering service unto one another. All right? But when the center is missing, that example is appropriate. It's saving the coat of the drowning man, and the man drowns. I can give other examples, but that's, I guess, okay. Balaram Diva, you're very enthusiastic to ask something.
Yes, it's one extension to what Sansadatta Hu and Govindwar.
Okay.
Could there be...
Hey, look at the time. It's 20 after 9.
I think it should be the last question. Now.
Last question. It's late.
Could there be just a difference when it was saying that in other Puranas, demigods are mentioned as the Supreme Personality? I was thinking that could there be a difference that they may not be mentioned as Sarvasva Prabhu or Vasudeva Sarvamiti?
That's right.
That,
that's correct.
But just as...
Correct. Yes. That's correct. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki. You're such a good group, I completely lost track of time.
Morning, 7 o'clock, class 2 is 3 o'clock.